2018-1802.
So this is a complaint regarding a hybrid appraisal completed on a residential property in Colorado Springs. The investigation revealed that the respondent performed an appraisal based on information provided by a third-party inspector that lacked sufficient detail or analysis to support the respondent's conclusions in the report. Along with the report lacking detail and analysis, the work file also lacks support. Due to the missing information, it does not appear that the respondent completed a credible report. Staff is alleging violations of 1261.713.1G, the record keeping rule, the scope of work rule, and standards rules 1 and 2. Recommendation is for a stipulation for diversion, a 7-hour or more class on how to support and improve your adjustments, the appraisal foundation class on scope of work, appraisals and inspections, and the appraisal foundation course on appraisal self-protection, documentation, and record keeping. Margaret was the investigator, so if you have any questions, she is here to answer them.
So here we are kind of with these hybrid appraisals. This is kind of a classic.
Yeah, you have to convince me on this one.
When this one was filed, too, it was filed last November before really a lot of discussion came out about the hybrid appraisal. Not that that makes any difference, except that it was also at a time where there was not a lot of direction on processes. And granted, the appraiser should have known that she needed to provide more information in order to be used for compliance. But, Colorado being a test state for the hybrid appraisals and things like that, none of the processes are standardized. And she definitely has issues as far as what she was supposed to do. And the company that she works for is a little bit different that this appraisal was engaged by, because they aren't a licensed AMC or anything like that. So they necessarily don't follow, they exerted a lot of pressure and a lot of undue stress as far as the process that they use to complete these bifurcated appraisals. So,
but there were other issues, just other than being a hybrid appraisal, were appraisal issues too, use tax issues, because
some of those did come from the very fact that it was a hybrid appraisal,
right?
And the outside inspector, the training that the company provided her in discussions talking to her about how what she was supposed to be providing, like I said, this was kind of before the whole process kind of started. I'm not negating that she should have done a lot more work and perhaps shouldn't even have accepted the assignment due to the lack of information, because technically that's kind of where...
Well, that's where she put a lot of weight at.
Right.
With the inspector, but there were other issues too, because her adjustments,
right,
there was no support for her adjustments,
right,
in the file. There was, an indication of no time adjustments necessary, but there had been a 36% increase in 3 years in values or something like that. She had appraisal problems too.
Actually did not create those graphs. The company, Mueller Services, created that graph and actually attached it into the report. So she never even saw that graph, which is weird.
I think it's important, though, since the complainant was able to speak to you, and we haven't had any communication from that company, I think it's important that we not identify or, you know, because they're accurate.
Disregard that.
Well, I understand that there wasn't a lot in her file, but I really... Yes, she didn't do time adjustments, but she explained why she didn't. I mean, maybe this isn't a perfect appraisal, but from the
what I read, and even the two comps that they wanted put in there, there was a basement and a garage in one and a garage in another. And I lived in an 800 square foot house for a while. And believe me, if you have a basement, it's like having another house.
Right.
So I don't think
I don't put stock always when they want to put supply comps because they're not always better or whatever. But there were issues with her actual appraisal.
But I don't think from her comps. I think she said, I didn't see a time adjustment for these. And, you know, I don't, what was the, did we have the engagement letter? I mean, I just think this was a, yes, maybe she shouldn't have accepted it. Maybe she didn't have enough in her file. But just reading the appraisal, I went, okay, you know, I understand this was a tough one. So I guess I'm just feeling a little bit more.
But any other appraisal, if they don't have support in their adjustments and support, would it be considering what?
Well, I noticed you said that, the respondent didn't have calculations or other details. So when you took a look at the printout of the list of properties that she emailed to you, when you were asking about the adjustments, were those adjustments reasonable considering what was seen in those sales in your discussion? So the adjustments were reasonable.
Right.
You're nodding. Okay.
I would agree with that.
Okay. So I would say in terms of the work file, the work file says, and I don't know if that was part of a work file or and it didn't have or whatever, but it was revealed to you. I don't know if it was, you know, your work file just needs to be retrievable. So I have no idea how she stored it. But the work file rule tells us that she needs all information and data necessary to support what she did, not that she has written calculations next to those MLS sheets. So, I mean, from what you're saying, the adjustments were reasonable based on the data she provided. That data supports her adjustments. So I would, you know, we need enough to recreate what she did. I mean, that's basically what work file is. So I'm just looking at it as, like, I can spell out my adjustments differently than him, than her, than her, than him, than him. And as long as all of us in our own files have enough support.
And the problem is there's just not enough support and data. I mean, you read through the consistency and information that I was reading here, there's not enough information to make a decision whether or not I can provide a credible report. Reading that. That's the common, the consistent thing.
That's even then. I'm just talking about where we're talking about adjustments.
Yeah.
No, I thought that was an odd.
Yeah.
Well, may I just also add about the adjustment? She was able to tell me on the telephone, explain what she had in the file. I wouldn't say that what was in the work file would have been sufficient to provide somebody with an understanding of how it's done. It was in a conversation that she was able to justify, which was why I was saying there was the lack of support.
Right.
I mean, there may have been documentations, but it didn't specifically spell out how she got to from point A to point B.
But she provided that.
Which she did.
And then the extraordinary assumption issue you were bringing up, and she probably should have had the extraordinary assumption, which I guess wouldn't you want that on all these hybrid appraisals?
Well, that's the thing. That was my
such a tricky.
And I had one down on my house, and I mean, it was basic, you know, and there was not a lot of information, and it worked for my requirement, you know, the use of the report. And so you got to say, why did they order this hybrid? It wasn't a sale. And so then you go, what was in the engagement letter that tells me what she? Yes, I would have done an extraordinary assumption. Yes, we would have all done that. We hadn't seen the inside. It's just kind of strange.
So, but if you're saying, like you said just briefly said, well, I think we should be making that extraordinary assumption on every one of these, right? But the definition of an extraordinary assumption is it's specific to the assignment. So if we're doing it on every one of them,
it's weird.
And I think as long as, because, and we don't have to say extraordinary assumption in a report. We don't even use that term. So as long as it's clear what her data sources were, and she was using that to come to conclusions, she's covered use that. But she's made it clear to her intended.
Right. I don't put extraordinary assumption on my eminent domain reports that say this is, premises on that the highway project's going to be completed. We know that's the case.
That's the
Some people put it in there.
Some, right now.
But we know that's the reason for the report.
I don't know if there was any discussion of that, though, in our appraisal. Instead of saying
there is some language in the certifications
that she's dependent on an outside source.
Right, but nothing specific in the report to where she identified.
There were problem areas, and you're asking that your recommendation is diversion on this, and 7 hours of coursework, I think, and then the 2 TAF things. There were still some problems with the appraisal. So I don't think a diversion is really terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, there could be much worse.
I think the fact that she actually, I think of all, I was trying to boil it down to what's the issue? What's the one issue? And it was sort of what we've touched on, which is she's basically saying, yeah, I don't really know if I had enough information to know it was C4 condition. And then there's no description of the physical characteristics. I think that is the problem with that. If you weren't confident yourself, you need to become confident because you've analyzed it more, or not more, or what.
What was the coursework in again? I just had it total 7 hours. It was one course, wasn't it?
I don't have that. Referral.
I don't have it.
Mark, can you name those off again, please?
The courses?
Yeah.
Just
I know one of them was
7 or more hours of how to support and improve your adjustments, and then there's 2 appraisal foundation courses. One is scope of work, appraisals and inspections, and the other is appraiser self-protection, documentation, and record keeping.
Right.
And those are each 4 hour courses.
Those are 7, so diversion and 14 hours, 13 hours. I don't think that's unreasonable.
So is a diversion something that gets published to the ASC?
No, it's open. It's an open record if it's requested, but it's considered dismissed once the terms are completed.
And this would say this would be one that says this is not disciplinary action, or
well, the language includes something about that it's dismissed.
The language has verbiage that says that this is an alternative resolution as opposed to pursuing formal discipline, and then it goes on to say that once the terms have been met, that any further disciplinary action is dismissed. But it also goes on to say that it's held as a permanent record by you all. It's not published. It is accessible through CORA. And it also has language in there that says that in the event that there was another complaint, you all can consider it in the review of a future complaint. For example, if it was the same issues, it's reasonable to use this as an aggravating factor, say.
But she also had a previous issue, too, but it was cleared, though, right?
And that was due to a family emergency that she didn't complete her continuing education, and therefore she was out of state.
That was just for continuing education.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
There was no other.
It was not an appraisal related thing.
So just to give you some insight on, because I made the recommendation for you all and definitely deviate from it, I think one of the challenges with making the recommendation on this report was just that this is the first one that you're seeing. And I was being empathetic because I think, unfortunately, she chartered into uncharted waters. We're seeing issues with these emerging quasi appraisal products. She's the first one that's come before you, so it was more from an educational standpoint than a punitive one.
Which is something we can consider even with AMC is doing is as well to the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think the issue wasn't really, you know, it resulted from the hybrid process, but it was like, I mean, it could have been on a 2055 exterior. Oh, I don't know enough information about it. Okay, well then, there's certain ways you need to proceed that. I mean, that was the issue. It wasn't really that, oh, it's a third party, or I don't magical about that, you know.
That's not my concern.
I think this was very, you know, I mean, certainly, like you're saying, it's kind of a uncharted, but I think considering that kind of one aspect, this is fair.
So after talking to her, did you think that she would do this again?
Definitely not. No, I mean, she was very open to the conversation, and she was, you know, she made comments throughout the whole thing, like, wow, I'm going to let everybody know down here that we need to be looking at these things. You know, we're just starting to get into these hybrids, and gee, never thought about that. And, you know, so no, I definitely think she took it very seriously, and everything that was brought to light, I think she is incorporating that into her practice.
Just as a side note, I get emails from companies all the time to join their list to do these type of things. I'm scared as hell to even think about it right now. I just don't want to be involved. But now, down the road, who knows what happens.
Well, I think maybe, too, once the processes get standardized, because that's the other thing, you know, and I know, Josh, you're very, you do a lot of work with the hybrid appraisals or bifurcated appraisals,
right.
And until those processes are standardized and it's become an official market product, that it is kind of difficult to know what everybody's looking for, because
the problem is we're licensed. I mean, we have to follow use path. And
right.
Those two don't jive right now.
Right. Well,
but the public still wants the same amount of eyes and same amount of due diligence on whether it's a hybrid or
Oh, that's a good point. What the public?
Yeah. I did have a question before. I don't know if we're. I want to get this in before we finish the case.
Sure, go ahead.
The AMC named. And I know this wasn't like really a big issue in coming up with the consequences here, but since the AMC in this case is not having a panel of contractor appraisers, which is our definition in the state, are we expecting appraisers to look at our rule or law, I don't know which it is, where we have to post the fee to the report, because that's not an AMC order according to our rule. So I'm not concerned with this case, but this brought it up, and I would hate for that to be one little extra ding that we throw on something.
So in this particular case, this is not an AMC.
Right.
And the whole reason that was put into the law about the appraiser has to disclose in their report was to put some accountability on somebody to get that fee in there so that the consumer would actually know what the appraiser was being paid.
Right.
It was never, the concept was never to be, hey, let's find another way to discipline the appraisers. The AMCs refused during the legislative process to make any of the fee disclosures, so we placed it on the appraiser. And like Margaret said, this company is not an AMC, so there wouldn't be that expectation on the appraiser.
I, as an appraiser, would still be probably inclined to put that in there, though. Just to
I was just noting because it was in this report. It was noted in the report. I know it didn't carry weight in terms of discipline, but I mean,
it kind of spoke to how she was engaged to the respondent was engaged to complete the reports and the expectations of the company that she was engaged by. because of their practices and their expectation, especially where the time constraints were concerned. I don't know, anybody in their right mind as an appraiser, it's like you were saying, I'd be terrified to do something like that. And when they're expecting you to turn it around in less than 4 hours.
Well, that's right. That's the records.
Right. I mean, but my point here is just that we noted it in her investigative report that she failed to disclose the fee and that it violated the rule. But I'm wanting you to know, like, we need to discuss this. Shouldn't we be citing it? I as a personal friend, I type my fee in every report. As a company, we will never ask an appraiser to remove the fee. So, I mean, I don't have an ulterior motive here. I just want to know, should we be citing the person or not? Because the appraisers need to know.
That's not listed in the list of violations.
Okay, because
it wasn't, so we shouldn't have that. As a side note, that if they're not an AMC, they're not regulated.
The appraiser is not required.
But that company is not regulated as an AMC either.
Interesting. Well, probably need to move on. But okay, my personal opinion is I think the staff's recommendation is fine. I'll look for someone to make a motion if they're wanting to continue on that or any changes.
I would move to accept the recommendations of staff.
Okay, do I have a second? We have a second. All in favor say yes.
Yes.
Yes. All opposed say no.
No.
Okay, motion's carried. Okay, on to licensing matters.
That's me again.
Okay, 2019-3. Jump the gun.
Complaint number 2019-378 is an application for a preliminary advisory opinion. The applicant had a 2012 felony conviction for assault on a peace officer. Although his conviction was expunged, it was used as a basis to revoke the applicant's California real estate salesperson's license in 2014 and to place his California appraiser's license on probation in 2015. He has not yet completed the terms of his license probation regarding the submission of appraisal logs every 6 months, and he does currently possess a Colorado real estate broker's license. And we don't usually give you licensing recommendations, just to remind you.
Well, the events were quite a while ago. Well, 2012 was the... I guess 2012 was the felony when he attempted to...
But that's been expunged now.
It's been expunged.
So really the focus is on the license discipline in California.
Right, and it's been... His real estate license was revoked. And his appraisal license... is now it's active after probation.
It's active and on probation.
On probation. Any idea what probation is there in California?
There's kind of a catch to this because he paid the fine. It was kind of a hefty fine in California. He paid that fine. He needs to provide logs of his appraisals. But he completed one log, I believe one out of six. He no longer lives in California, so he is no longer doing California appraisals. So he cannot complete his probation terms in California. So he will never get off of probation in California. His license will expire. I don't recall the date of that, but it's kind of a catch. He moved here.
Yeah,
he moved here.
I'm a little concerned what the general public thinks of us approving appraisers that loss of their real estate license in another state and are on probation, still active but on probation in another state. I'm just a little concerned how that looks.
Well, he does have his Colorado broker's license.
Yeah.
And
so that wasn't any problem.
So I don't know about California, how California works, but I know here, having the benefit of having the real estate commission in the same division as you all,
right.
The real estate commission seems to be more punitive than you guys are. They have over 47,000 real estate brokers. So they do appear to be quicker to take a license, particularly for post-licensure criminal convictions, than, I mean, you don't hardly ever see it.
When was his real estate license issued here in Colorado? Is that fairly recent?
Yes, it was. I think it was last year.
So the real estate commission felt it was okay.
And the overriding thing that you also have to consider as far as your licensing decision here is you've got a rehabilitation statute. So you need to look and see, do you believe he's been rehabilitated or not? It shouldn't just be based on the fact that California, who I'm sure their population of real estate brokers blows ours out of the water.
No.
Whether just based on California revoking a salesperson license.
Yeah, I think the thing to do is to keep as separate as possible. Because I'm reading on here, it says in the event the respondent should leave California to reside or practice outside the state, respondent must notify the Bureau in writing of the dates of departure and return. Who's to know if he actually did say, you know, South California, something like, hey, I moved here a year later. But it doesn't say that they can't practice. And of course, if the state of Colorado or California said that, then we're a different jurisdiction. So I feel just by reading this, he has been rehabilitated. I don't see any other priors or anything like that, even here or since the last time.
He did take classes for alcoholic and issued bipolar. I guess that has to hold a big impact, isn't Colorado real estate decides he can practice here, I guess. I mean, I'm not so sure we can.
Well, they're an independent board, so they
are.
They're independent assessment.
They are independent, but if they felt it was okay for a depression.
And I don't even know if he's gone through the necessary education yet. So this is just a preliminary advisory opinion.
Right.
He just wants to test your temperature about allowing him into law, into practice.
I'm inclined to go ahead and let him at least apply and process. That's my take on it.
I would agree.
At this point, let's see what happens. We have a motion then?
I move that we communicate a positive preliminary opinion.
Do I have a second?
For 201937.
Second. All in favor say yes.
Yes.
All opposed say no. Okay, that motion is carried. Complaint B, 2019-578.
So this is an application for licensure. The applicant has a 1999 felony conviction for fail to report accident fixtures. Essentially, he allowed somebody to borrow his car, and it was later involved in multiple accidents, and he reported it stolen in order to try to avoid any liability.
This is 20 years ago.
He didn't even kind of know that on his record or something.
I know this was like an adventure in college. Like this person was stupid, and you know I didn't think it for such so long ago. I thought this doesn't really carry much weight for what we believe he's like now.
I think just the biggest thing was like why did he put it on there even?
Yeah, I'm surprised that was so dead. Well, he kind of didn't know though, I guess. He thought it was just on traffic.
Well, and after looking at it, I think the complaint was on campus, right?
Right.
So even then, he's probably, it wasn't really a police thing. It was on campus. And
I guess he's not. I don't do anything wrong on campus either. I'm inclined to go ahead and let him apply. I don't know if everyone else feels that way. Or
I would move to practice.
Okay, I think we have a moment.
I would move to allow complaint 2019-578 to apply for a license.
Okay, second.
So he has applied. It's for the to grant.
To grant
after he completes everything.
So it'll be the case, not complaint.
We give them all case numbers just because this is part of tracking our workload.
Yeah. Okay. So we have a motion. Do I get a second, Bill, on that?
Second.
All in favor say yes. Yes. All opposed say no. Okay, that motion is carried. Okay, ESP matters. Penny.